TalkingTrading.com.au is your weekly fix podcast of share market expert interviews. Our team of experts will help you make the right decisions about what, when, and where to trade. Let's get cracking.
Hello and welcome to today's show. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have your trading company. We join Louise Bedford and Chris Tate for Cafe Conversations today as they interview the legendary Dr. Harry Stanton for the Mind Power Profit Pack. They take a sneak peek into Harry's wisdom on the psychology it takes to succeed in the markets. The Trading Game spokesmodel for Opportunity International, Richard Fakery, also joins Chris and Louise. And we hear Chris Tate's views on why traders who give more end up making more in the markets. We also hear how the Trading Game's going on its goal of raising $15,000 by the 1st of June. And Richard tells us his perspective about the ongoing support of the mentor program. We have trading trivia, but first up, here's the news for the week ending 23rd of May with stockbroker Evan McGuire from Phillip Capital. What happened in the Aussie stock market last week, Evan?
Hi, Caroline. Yeah, look, it was a quiet week. We did see that the market grind a little bit higher. We saw the ASX 200 end week at 5,497, up 0.3% from the previous week. We saw the RBA board release their minutes. The basic message there from the RBA is that they're on a wait and see mode at the moment in terms of interest rates. We also saw a 6.8% decline from the Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Confidence Index. It's probably a little bit of a hangover from what came out of the budget. You know, the market seems to be stuck in a range at the moment between, that sort of 5,400, 5,500 on the ASX 200. Not really a lot of volume going through at the moment, Caroline, and even Friday, fairly subdued, about $4 billion worth of stock changing hands. So, again, a little bit quiet at the moment. We do seem to be stuck in a range right now.
What were some hot and what were some cold sectors?
Yeah, look, in terms of the, I'll start with the cold sectors. Information technology, industrials and materials were the cold sectors for the week. In terms of the hot sectors, we saw telecom services, consumer staples and utilities. They were the better performers for the week.
In terms of technical analysis, did any patterns jump out from the charts this week?
Not a lot. There was a few stocks that I'm taking a close look. I mean, obviously we saw a big move in Treasury Wine Estates this week, ASX code CWE. They had a very big move this week, but it may hit some resistance at its current level. Qantas looks like it's trying to move higher. Western Areas had a good one, and Adelaide Brighton, I'll be watching that at the moment. It was a bit weaker this week. They had their annual meeting. I'd like to see the stock stay supported here at this sort of 350 level. If it breaks that, keep an eye on it. Could go a lot lower than that.
Any opportunities you're looking at this week?
Look, we've got US and UK markets closed on Monday. So in the US, we've got the Memorial Day holiday, and in the UK, we've got the spring bank holiday. So I'm not expecting anything significant to happen really in our market till sort of Wednesday. There'll be quiet trading. I'd say tomorrow, Tuesday, will be probably a little bit quieter. We'll probably get a lot more of our cues out of the Asian markets. And, you know, we do have a bit of economic data coming out this week. Offshore US durable goods orders data is coming out. US Consumer Confidence Index and S&P Case-Shiller House Price Index is coming out from the US. In terms of locally, the Australian market, we've got the HIA new home sales, and we've also got construction data coming out this week as well. So I'm not really looking for anything spectacular to jump out. Again, it's very subdued. We've got options expiring the 29th of May. We might see a bit of action that day. But outside of that, the US market, we saw close at a record high on Friday.
In what terms did it of close on, Ev?
Just on 1900 for the S&P 500. So, you know, it's US market. We just don't seem to be moving with the US market right now. There seems to be a disconnect. We're very much stuck in a range at the moment, and we really need to get some be nice to see some direction either way right now, so we can, you know, we can get some action in the market. And I suppose if we can get a good footing or holding above the 5500, 5510, 5520 level on the ASX 200 and do it with a bit of volume, I think we'll move higher.
Any advice for traders this week?
Oh, look, this week, I still think it's going to be quiet. Again, keep an eye on the US data that comes out, and hopefully we'll get some positive data come out from our market locally, and we'll move and bust through that 5500 and hopefully head more to 5600 over the next few weeks. But again, we need a decent move and a bit of volume to go through.
Evan Maguire, thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Caroline.
Sick of being the smartest person in the room? Tell your friends about the Talking Trading podcast and let them come to the party too. TalkingTrading.com.au.
Louise Bedford here. I recently made a trip to Hobart with my business partner Chris Tate to meet up with Dr. Harry Stanton, who is a great friend of ours. Harry is a psychologist and a trader and a peak performance coach, and I took this opportunity to talk to him about the MindPower Profit Pack. This pack not only includes his second edition of Harry's iconic trading book, Let the Trade Winds Flow, but also a wonderful DVD that I recently recorded with Harry. I asked Harry to tell us a bit about his background and what inspired him to rewrite Let the Trade Winds Flow.
Well, I started off really as a teacher and without any great interest in psychology. Then I'd interested in, well, hopefully improving my own life and hoping improving relationships and so on. I still remember the first psychology lecture I went to there, and it said, look, if you think this is going to help you with your relationships and living your life better, you better find somewhere else. And I thought that was a wonderful example of motivation. But I stuck with psychology, then went into hypnosis. I was interested in hypnosis since my early 20s. And it all boiled down to looking at some of the very old techniques that have been around for years and years, centuries, that help people handle their lives better. And so that the trade winds flow stemmed out of ways of helping people improve their lives, and rewrote it and bring it up to date with much more additional material from both yourself and Chris to make it even more suitable for traders.
Because things change in the markets, but often, as you say, Chris, things often stay the same, don't they?
Well, they have to, because people are always the same. And I think that's the great mistake that people make, is that they believe that somehow technology will overcome their failings. All technology does is make their failings more apparent, more spectacular, and often prettier. So people, there is this argument that markets change. They don't really, because people don't change.
One of the things that you're often told is that in therapy work like I do, that you should tailor everything except everything different, because people are so different you can't use the same techniques. I've developed a set of basic techniques that would appear to work with almost everyone. You do the same thing again and again, but in fact just vary it according to the specific things that people want. But you're quite right. People don't vary much. Things pretty much do stay the same. Mm. And the techniques that have worked for centuries are probably going to continue to work for a few more centuries.
People are quite sort of heterogeneous as a mass. That's just the way they are. But the thing that's always intrigued me, and this is what I want to ask you, is that traders are always so resistant to looking at their own psychology. And I've always wondered whether that is a factor of whether they believe it doesn't work, or whether subconsciously they're frightened that looking at their own psychology will present them with things that they're really not prepared to deal with at that time.
Yeah, I think you've probably got something there too. I think it comes to something even more basic than that. And it seems to me that people find great difficulty in accepting responsibility for their own behaviour. It's always someone else's fault. And that stops you having to look at what you're doing yourself to see if, in fact, you're doing things that are not in your own interest. And, of course, psychology does bring you face-to-face with the fact that maybe I need to vary what I'm doing to do things a bit differently.
But can people be taught to or forced to face their own mistakes? Or is it in an internal realisation that all of a sudden becomes apparent? Or do they have to be hit with a stick?
I don't think you can force people to do anything. I'm fortunate. I get very quick results with people because they come to me when they reach a point where they think, God, I've got to do something about this, but they don't know what to do, and often I can provide a way of them doing it. But on the other hand, the people I normally don't get anywhere with, the ones that come along and say, make me do this or make me do that. You can't make people do things. They've got to want to do it for themselves.
But that's the old notion too. Stage hypnotists say that I can sort of bring out the extrovert in you, but I can't make you go out and stab the person in the front row if you don't want to.
That's right. And in fact, it's interesting, actually, the bit of an illusion with stage hypnotists. It's interesting here. You see them sending various people back to their seats. There's only about one person in 20 who really can do the things that stage hypnotists want them to do. And there's more simple ways of finding people who are very susceptible. And the ones that don't fit in, you see, you don't work with
you
them.
You boot, yeah.
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 When I work with doctors and nurses and traders, if I'm doing a demonstration, naturally I'll identify the ones who are most susceptible. And they'll be the ones I work with.
Harry, you've had such an impact on my life. When I first read The Plus Factor, which was the first positive motivational book that was released in Australia, I was 15 years old, and you're the reason why I studied psychology all those years ago. So knowing that we've worked on this incredible project together, it has just warmed my heart, and I cannot thank you enough for the impact you've had on my life.
You make me feel very humble about all that. It's nice to know that I've had a good effect. Yeah, that's what we all hope to do, isn't it? Hope that we can somehow influence people to make their lives better in some way or another. And it's terrific that you've made it so clear to me that I've been able to help you like that.
For more information about the MindPower Profit Pack, go to tradinggame.com.au and grab some of Harry's wisdom for yourself. If you're serious about making money in the markets, you really can't walk past this pack. So now's your chance. Go to tradinggame.com.au and check it out for yourself.
Last week's trivia question was, where was the oldest stock exchange in the USA? And while most of the answers I received were Chicago, the correct answer is in fact Philadelphia. And trivia buff Errol Andrews was the first person to answer correctly. Located at the Merchants Coffee House, the Philadelphia Stock Exchange was founded in 1790. The Chicago Stock Exchange was founded nearly a century later, in 1882. Next week's trivia question is, which company traded the highest price for a share of stock? Was it A, Yahoo Japan, B, Berkshire Hathaway, C, Mechanics Bank, or D, Google? Find out the answer next episode. Recognize this guy? That's the Dalai Lama.
Indeed, I'm very happy.
How does the Dalai Lama recommend people get happy?
If you do wrong things, mainly harming other, you get negative consequences. If you do helping other, bring more happiness to other, you get benefit. More inner strength there, and more sort of confidence of purpose of life, and fulfillment about that purpose, then you always feel happy.
Microcredit provides loans to people living in third world poverty to help transform their lives. Offering a hand up rather than a hand out, it uses a sustainable approach to solve poverty. One of the earlier supporters of microcredit was Bill Clinton, and here's how he described it.
Essentially, microcredit involves giving loans, sometimes quite small loans, $25, $50, to people in countries with a per capita income usually of under $2 a day and quite often of under $1 a day. So the people who are there very often have never drawn a paycheck, don't have a balance sheet, don't have a systems of assets and liabilities, don't have a credit rating. So they have to be loaned to based on their skills and reputation for honesty in the community. But we know now that microcredit programs that are well managed have a repayment rate in excess of 98%, even in the poorest countries. And that once you give enough loans, they can have an impact not only in their own community, but throughout the country. So there are all these microcredit ways of giving now.
Trading Game is a proud supporter of Opportunity International. Recently, Louise Bedford and Chris Tate caught up with Trading Game spokesmodel for Opportunity International, Richard Fakery, for another Cafe Conversation.
Louise Bedford here. I'm having breakfast with Chris Tate and Richard Fakery. Chris Tate, of course, is my business partner with tradinggame.com.au, and Richard Fakery is our spokesmodel for Opportunity International, and that is our favourite charity. We're raising money for microloans for people who want to start their own business overseas in third world countries. So we're nearly at our target of $15,000 to be raised by June 1st by the mentorees. So Richard, tell us a little bit more about microloans and how they work.
Well, microloans are small recyclable loans really given into some of the very poor families in the third world, India, the Philippines and other parts of Asia, where a very, very small amount, say $100, $200 Australian, can get people started in their own business. And not only does it help them generate their own income, it also helps the self-esteem of the family and ultimately the village. So they're fantastic.
And isn't it good that the loans are often recycled in that community? Because what they've found with the microloan concept is that apparently over 90% of the loans are given to women, and the women are starting little tiny businesses like, you know, etching shells or buying a rooster to sire little, you know, baby chickens.
And selling potato chips.
So they're things that are just small little businesses. But because there's pressure on these people to use the money well, they actually do pay back that loan because there's psychological pressure. If they don't pay back their loan, then their cousin will miss out on a business. Oh, that's
right.
Good, isn't it?
You know, recycling's fantastic, and it builds too. So it's just like a massive tidal wave spreading throughout the community. Fantastic.
And Chris, why do you think it is that traders who tend to give the most money actually end up making more in the markets?
I think probably the rationale for that is that it's not a nebulous concept like karma. It's more a recognition that they're very well-rounded, very well-developed grown-ups who accept that society is built upon many, many individuals and that everybody has to contribute something to that. And really only people who are grown up can trade successfully. And really only people who are grown up manage to come to that realisation that they actually have to give something back for society to function properly.
Richard, I just wanted to cover one more thing before I let you go. I received an email. Ah, oh, thank you, yes. We are in a cafe, we are having breakfast, so this is live. I received an email during the week saying, oh, look, it's okay for you to look after the mentorees, and that's good because I hear that you do put in a lot of effort. But after the mentor program's finished, goodness gracious, do you actually just leave people without support, or what happens there? Now, Richard, you're in an ideal position to comment on this. When did you do the mentor program?
I started in 2008.
2008, gosh.
And I'm still going.
Fabulous. Maybe you can tell people about the level of support we provide.
The support's fantastic. It is what you want, though. If you don't participate, and actively engage in the program, then you suffer the fate that I've suffered, and that is you don't finish it. The beauty of it is, though, that you can tackle each module as and when you see fit. If you follow on and join the alumni group, you get an amazing group of people who are so helpful. There's coffee groups that are formed in whichever part of the world you live in. So for people to say that there is no ongoing support, absolute nonsense.
I thought you were going to say something else then.
Well, I was. Chris is looking at me in a very angry mood.
Now, it does interest me that you say you don't feel you've completed the mentor program, because I actually personally don't think you can ever complete the mentor program. It is a repeat for free course. So the more that you continue on with the markets, you'll realise that, sure, there are new things being added every day. So we add new things to the mentor program every single year, don't we, Chris?
We try to.
But I think I can tell you have, because in 2008, it certainly wasn't the program it is today. The videos that you have are incredible, and you can replay them and replay them because you have access to them. So no, it's a wonderful developing thing, and I can tell you that I spent a lot of money on previous instructors, spruikers, call it what you like.
Say the word shonks.
Shonks. Yeah, there's a couple of other words, but I won't use those. And since I've started with you guys, I just don't bother with them anymore. It's just a waste of time and a distraction. And that's true. I'm not just saying that because you're kicking me under the table. Right?
Richard, it's always lovely catching up with you. We'll bring you another episode from the cafe very shortly on talkingtrading.com.au.
To donate to Opportunity International and make Trading Game's target of $15,000 by June 1, email me at caroline@talkingtrading.com.au. That's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our contributors, Dr. Harry Stanton, Richard Fakery, Louise Bedford, and Chris Tate. Stay tuned next week for analysis of the federal budget with tax accountant and TV staff, Jason Cunningham. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team, thanks for your company. See you next time. Happy trading.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.